Welcome to the ABOP Podcast. ABOP is the Alliance of Black Orchestral Percussionists, a nonprofit organization that focuses on mentoring future generations of Black percussionists. My name is Raynor Carroll. I'm an ABOP founder. Thank you for joining us. My guest for this podcast is Josh Jones. Josh, a native of Chicago, Illinois, started hitting things at age 2 and received his first drum set at age 3. Josh began his formal studies in percussion with the Percussion Scholarship Program under the direction of Chicago Symphony member Patricia Dash and Chicago Lyric Opera member Douglas Waddell. He earned his bachelor's in music from DePaul School of Music and was the orchestra fellow of both the Detroit and Pittsburgh Symphonies. In 2022, Josh joined the Grant Park Festival Orchestra as principal percussionist. He has also authored a percussion method book series, Spatial Studies for Hitting Things. Josh enjoys giving back to the community as well as mentoring young musicians. And Josh is an ABOP founder. Josh, welcome to the ABOP podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. And I have to start with, do you still have your first drum set?
I don't. That's something My parents wish they kept it. I broke the bass drum, so there wasn't really a reason to keep it. I guess had we known what was going to happen, they might have still kept it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with all of us. We look back to our first pair of sticks, you know, our first snare drum, our first drum set or whatever, and like, damn, if I'd only kept that, had you known, you know, you can't keep everything. So it's understandable. But what drum set was this that you could play on at 3 years old?
A Disney Mickey Mouse drum set that was blue, had bass drum, had one tom, one little snare that, you know, connected to it, and a cymbal on top of the bass drum. And that I do remember when I was a kid, because the picture of Mickey Mouse had two cymbals, and I'm like, where's the other cymbal? I do remember that distinctly.
You started hitting on things when you were 2. You got your drum set at 3. So why the drums? Did it just come natural for you?
I think it just came natural. No one in my family played drums. My dad and his sister played electric bass. Grandma sang and played piano. I think she played violin. My aunt played piano, although she probably played piano a little bit. My cousins on my dad's side are the gospel group, the Williams Brothers, which I didn't, obviously, when I was that young, I had no concept of who they were. Grammy nominated.
All right.
Yeah, no one played drums, though. I don't know why I liked drums. I probably just liked the feeling of hitting something. It was a very immediate response to whatever I was doing. It just seemed cool, I guess. So
how did you make that transition from drum set to orchestral?
So when I was in fourth grade, my band teacher, Angela Addison Davis, received a couple applications for a program called the Percussion Scholarship Program. So when I went to band one day in fourth grade, she had a pair of bongos up front and was like, oh, can anyone play these bongos? So I raised my hand and she gave me the bongos and I played a little something. I wish I remember what I played, and then she was like, okay, see me after class. So I went to her after class and she handed me the application and told me to have my parents fill it out and she'll submit it and see what happens. Long story short, I had to go to a concert that PSP was going to be putting on in, I think, May. And it was a requirement to go to that concert to sign up for an interview. So my mom and I went. I remember her saying, well, we're going to sit up front. And then I think what happened, the front row was reserved for the students who were going to be playing. So they were, can you sit in the second row instead? Because everybody else is going to sit up here. And so we sat in the second row, I think. And I thought it was cool. You saw the youngest kids playing drum pad and snare drum. And as the kids got older, you saw them play more difficult and crazier things. And so I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then the last piece they played up until that last piece, Douglas Waddell, the director, would always conduct the pieces. But this last piece, he counted them off, ran to the back of the section, and started playing boo bams. And they did the entire piece unconducted. And I thought that was the coolest. It was River Dance. I thought it was the coolest thing. It was extremely exciting. I was like, "Mom, I have to join this group." And she was, "Oh, you're going to join this group." So long story short, I got in, and my first interaction with them was at the interview, and they had a drum pad for me to play on. And here I'm like, "Where's the drum set? We're just gonna do a drum pad? Okay, this is gonna be a piece of cake." But yeah, they essentially, their goal number one was to give inner city kids in Chicago a chance to actually learn orchestral percussion, and give them a great music education and to instill the values of music and things like that. It wasn't necessarily a goal of theirs to have every student go on into music. If they did, great. If they didn't, at least they had a good experience and learned the values that you learn playing music. It just so happens that I was the first student to actually win an orchestral job from the program.
I
So,
see. When you're playing drum set, before this happened in fourth grade, were you taking any lessons, getting any direction, or are you just doing it on your own?
doing it on my own, I wish I knew the concept of practicing when I was young.
Oh, come on.
Because I only had Sundays to actually get on a drum set. Sunday night during testimony service, they would let me play a drum set whenever someone sings, like, "Down by the Riverside," and I'm like, "Yeah."
Right. Were you learning by what you saw others do? How did you learn? How did you pick it up?
So I think mainly it was from what I heard more than what I saw. And it's weird because I remember in our car, which was a silver Lumina. I can't believe I still remember that car. We had like five cassette tapes, and one of them was a Disney songs cassette tape that we just played over and over again. And then one was a jazz cassette tape. I'm pretty sure it was Down to the Bone. There could have been another one. And we had Earth, Wind, and Fire. We had the Rocky IV soundtrack of all games, which was one of my favorite soundtracks from the Rocky series. But the third movie is my favorite movie, I think. But yeah, so I literally would just memorize the songs. And actually, with the Disney tape, I started hearing not only the main parts, but I would sing the counterpoint lines, and then I would sing the violin line, and then I would sing the trumpet line. Like, I didn't know what I was actually doing at the time. It was just like, "Oh, I hear this today, and I hear this today." So I think I was mainly mimicking whatever I heard on drum set.
And going into classical, was it an easy transition for you?
I think it was an easy transition. I don't remember it being difficult until we got to mallets. I was absolutely horrendous at mallets. Luckily they didn't kick me out. But yeah, I think I what was also cool, Doug was the He was the main teacher for me. And something he would always do or talk about was groove and what's the feel of the music. And so I feel like that really helped me use what I was learning, quote unquote, at church with as far as like feeling the music and stuff, and translating that to my classical lessons.
When did you start listening to Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, Mozart?
I think as soon as I got in the program, my parents started buying me those, big box sets of the best of 150 classical pieces of music with, so yeah, I was always I liked all the fast loud stuff because I thought it was cooler. And actually, it's funny, one of the pieces that I really liked was the Triumphal March from Aida, and I just got the lyric. Of course, I don't what at the time I didn't know what I was listening to. I just thought it was cool. I had no concept of this is an opera by Verdi. But when those pieces that I used to listen to as a kid come back up, it's like, oh, I know this. I that when I was five.
That's kind of the cool thing about music. If it has words, it doesn't matter sometimes. If it's just the music connects to you. And it can be the lyrics, and maybe not. And it doesn't have to be an opera, a ballet, a symphony, an etude, whatever. It's just you make that connection. And that's the bond that we have with the music, regardless of who wrote it or whatever. We just like it. We just like the way it sounds or find it interesting, in some way. So when did you get pulled in? Because I know at a younger age, you had not developed your practice routines yet. So how does that get going? How do you get more into it?
Well, with PSP, they always said you have to practice 45 minutes a day, every day. And so basically, my parents were like, okay, they say 45, you should probably do an hour. So that way you can really stay on top of things. So I don't think I ever had a problem doing that because, by the time you get through everything, like warm up wise, you do your 100 strokes, make sure you're tapping your foot and counting out loud. By the time you do that, it's probably been 10 minutes. So, you're, it'll take a while to get through everything and do it correctly. So it's not like by the time you finish, it's you still have 20 minutes left. You're pretty much done. So I think I never really had a problem doing that. And when I got older, around 15, Doug and Patsy, or Patsy Dash from Chicago Symphony, they both said essentially that they thought I could really go super far in music if I kept doing what I was doing. So they essentially started ramping up my lessons and giving me more difficult things and more things to work on. We started learning excerpts. Patsy even signed me up to take the CSO sublist audition, which is crazy. That was the most nerve-wracking audition. And then, of course, my dad, or not just my dad, my family would always kind of say you have to be twice as good, get where you're going. And so I figured, well, if I have to get twice as good to get halfway, it means I have to be four times as good to get all the way. So might as well just go eight times as good to get past all the way so I can ensure I have some.
So was that the mantra because of being black, or was it the mantra just to make it in the world, or both?
I think it was both. For me, I tried to focus more just making it because given my personal experience with, Doug and Patsy being in the group, I hadn't experienced any negative aspects as well, kind of. I didn't experience any noticeable negative aspects when I was younger in the group. I just thought,
Right.
oh, everybody who looks like everybody can play drums good. It was, we had a very diverse group all the time I was there. So it just seemed normal to me.
Right.
But Doug and Patsy, specifically Doug, before I went to college, they both basically sat me down and were like, not everybody's going to be happy that you're as good as you are and that you really like doing this and you work really hard and you practice and you know your excerpts at 17. Like,
Right.
so they were worried that it would be harder because I was as good as I was, and as passionate, I guess. And I think, again, I figured, well, it won't matter if I'm just that good. Like, I'll be undeniably good that I will basically beat racism, which is true and not true in some circumstances, but thankfully it's been more true than not, I think.
Yeah. Let me ask you something that's about you personal inside, if I may. In what we do as musicians and from a young age for you, I want to know how you were, how you took this direction, how you were able to spend the time, how you were able to vote the time. In other words, is it something inside of you that came easy, as in, I'm getting specific now with organizing the material, having a regular schedule? Because for some, it's difficult to have this discipline and to put all of these pieces together and figure it out that I need to do this at this time. I need to spend time doing this. So, has this been something that you've basically been good at since you were very young, or has it grown with you?
I think it's definitely something I've had to work on because I'm pretty obsessive with certain things. I'll just like I used to just practice five exercises and trying to get those five exercises great and then neglect the other six. Like I would get over analytical with things. And I think I had to learn when to move on, make sure that after a certain point, you also need to do these other 75 things. So it's like you're playing a really good video game, but then you have to still get ready to leave the house and go to the grocery store before it closes. So you can't just keep playing the video game to get to the next boss and the next boss. You have to save the game.
Right.
So that's something I had to learn. As far as organizing my time, I think that's something also I had to learn because I'm a person who likes to fill the day with either everything or nothing at all. So I did need to figure out what my own personal way of spending the time effectively and efficiently had to be in order to make the most of it. And thankfully with Doug and Patsy's, 45 minutes a day, that was a good learning tool to really make sure I set aside a time where I could not be rushed. And if I needed a little extra time, I had it. And if I didn't, then I didn't.
Yeah. So in learning that, was it hard? Was it easy? Was it, it was just something else I had to do. Was it a struggle that you really had to really focus on doing that? Or did it kind of just fall into place rather easily?
I don't think it was a struggle. I was always a kid who, if you told me to do something, I just did it. That's what I was supposed to do.
Yeah, that's what you're about.
So I think I just took them at their word Like they said 45 minutes, like, okay, I have to do at least 45 minutes. Yeah, I think I just tended to just do it. And I mean, of course there were days I didn't want to practice, but
Of
they said
course,
every day. So even if I didn't want to, I still practiced every day.
Did you have a moment when you realized, wow, this is working. I can do this. This feels natural. This is my purpose, playing and practicing and classical music or just music in general. Was there a moment like that for you?
I mean, there was a moment where I knew I really, really liked music. When it was probably before I was five. I wish I remembered the age. It was like late at night, and I heard the television come on and start playing the scene where Mufasa dies in Lion King. And so I'm in my bed. I'm like, why is the TV on playing the Mufasa scene? So I'm going to the living room to go turn off the TV. And of course, while you're getting closer to the TV, it gets louder. So I'm hearing it louder and louder. And then I go to the TV and it's off. But the music is still going on in my head. And so the scene finishes, I start crying because, it's the Mufasa scene. And then I go back to bed. Like, I probably was just sleepwalking, but that was the first and only time that's ever happened. So I think that was my, I guess, emotional awakening to music. As far as, playing classical music, when I went to Interlaken, we played Mahler's Second Symphony, and at the end of the symphony, we had like a 15-minute standing ovation where the conductor at the time, Jung Ho Park, whom I absolutely adore, at a certain point, the audience kept clapping, and he went backstage to grab the score and went back on stage while everybody's clapping and shook the score at the audience. And everybody went completely nuts. And I was like, this is amazing. So yeah, I mean, up until that point, because I was studying with Keith at the time, and a couple lessons with Scott. Can't remember his last name. It's Keith and Scott. And so up until then, lessons were difficult. There were some difficult relationships within the studio, and it was hard. It wasn't as fun as PSP. It was like grueling work, and not everybody was nice. Like, it was just up until that concert, I was like, I don't know if I really want to do this. This is hard, and not everybody's cool, and I'm tired. But then that concert happened, and I was like, that actually might be worth it.
So Interlaken, so you were in high school at this point?
I think I was either going into my freshman year or going into my sophomore year. I think I was going into my freshman year. I can't remember.
So, mentioning Mahler second, do you have some really favorite composers that you like to play that you found?
I love Prokofiev's stuff. Those are always fun. Even if I'm not doing much, it's just fun to listen to. Shostakovich, because again, it's well fun. I mean, it's fun to play. Most of his stuff's the most angsty things you could probably play. Yeah, those two these days are my favorite. Back, earlier I would say Mahler when I was a little younger. I could still say Mahler, but I think I'm gravitating more towards Prokofiev and Shostakovich these days. Love Rachmaninoff. I wish I could play the First Symphony again. I love that symphony. But yeah.
Well, by chance, those are three Russian composers, and I would also say the Russian school is probably my favorite. And I would put Stravinsky at the top for me, then Prokofiev. But it's a close one and two there. For me, the bass drum parts of Prokofiev are just amazing. It's just I can't describe it, the feeling I get from, and it's perhaps it doesn't take a principal to play the bass drum part, but I like playing those parts at in those certain times. Whether it's Romeo and Juliet, the Fifth Symphony, or whatever, those bass drum parts are just fantastic. I think they're overlooked,
I agree.
not as appreciated by a lot of folks. But it's the tuba, the bass drum, and I think the cellos are some of his favorite instruments. I believe have been quoted to have said that. So let me change gear a little bit because you are the social media guy. So how did you get into that? How did that develop?
My youngest sister told me I should take photos and put them on Instagram because of everything that I do. I was pretty apprehensive at first because, I didn't have a good phone camera and like, I don't know, I wasn't, in my view, there was nothing that I was doing that was worth putting online. And it wasn't until I started getting going and thinking, maybe I could start putting little lessons and things I was practicing online that it kind of took off. And then, of course, after my documentary that came out in 2015, I think it was 2015, then it really took off because people started finding me on Instagram from the documentary. So then I was like, well, actually, the document. Tours. They suggested that I have a website prepared and I link all of my social media to the website, just so that people had something to go look at after the documentary came out. So I was like, okay. So I started recording more and getting more into a habit of recording my practice sessions. And I think after finding that kind of rhythm, I just kind of kept it up.
Is that difficult to keep it up at this point, or not so much?
Sometimes it's difficult because either I don't feel like I'm practicing at a level that I want to be seen, or I feel like I don't have something to say. Like I don't like posting just to post. I like posting something I'm actually either working on or I'm passionate about at the time. So, because I really do think people can sense when you're just posting to post, like, here's a dog. Like, well, yeah, I have a dog, but or I don't know. They know when you're just phoning it in.
So instead of asking you next memorable moments, let's ask first forgettable. You have any forgettable or embarrassing moments on stage that you could mention?
Yeah, there's I was playing maybe I think I was still a fellow at Detroit. I think it was my second year. It might have been the first year though. We played Mahler's Second Symphony. I think it was Mahler. No, it wasn't Mahler. It was maybe it was Mahler 5. I can't remember what we were playing, but it was I think Javon was there and he was playing second timpani on something. I was playing Tam Tam. And on the last concert, it was during a soft section, and when I got up to play the Tam Tam, the stick fell over. So I was like, I still that's one forgettable moment. I think that's the most forgettable moment. I can't think of any others where I can still feel the embarrassment.
Well, mine would be also a Tam Tam incident. We had like a dress rehearsal followed by a concert, and in between, you go out to Demner or whatever. So we had our rehearsal, and a few of the guys put away some of the things that were not needed. And then we came back and played the concert. And I believe it was the Strauss Ein Heldenleben. I was playing, in addition to whatever, Tam Tam. And they put away the Tam Tam mallet. So I didn't even look. I just assumed the Tam Tam mallet's going to be there. So when it got to that one note, I think it's one note towards the end or something like that, I had to use my fist. You know, the audience probably didn't notice because I'm far enough away, but the sound was not the same. My fist just doesn't have the weight of the Tam Tam mallet. So tell me, what's a or several memorable moments that you've had on stage?
Other than the Mahler one from Interlaken, what is one? I got to play Grant Park. We got to play one of the pieces from Lion King. It's my favorite one. Yeah, and I was playing drum set.
Ah.
It was with full chorus. Yeah.
Was it is it the Circle of Life?
It was like a melody version. It started off with the what's the song? This Land. Da 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 dee dee. And it starts off with that, and then I had to do the suspended cymbals. So yeah, it was like Circle of Life, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Circle of Life. Yep.
So with all these great moments, what would your favorite or ideal gig be like?
You know?
Maybe a performance of Mahler 2 and Lion King at the same evening?
You know, it's one that'll never happen. I would have loved to play the Hunchback of Notre Dame score.
Mm-hmm.
Just that score is amazing. Especially if you had a full, there's no, it would be way too expensive and way too risky. But yeah, it will be so cool to do Hunchback with a full chorus with the movie playing in the background.
Right.
The rentals for that though will be insane, because the chime part, you'd need some soprano chimes, and it would be way too expensive to put on.
Well, I always say, be careful what you wish for, because I find that they come true, that eventually it'll happen. And with so many movie scores being performed live by orchestras these days, I'd say you never know. That one might come up too eventually, or they'll do a new reworking of it as they did with Lion King, you know,
yeah.
And then it'll be popular again, and then it will go around to all the orchestras again. So you never know. Get those soprano chimes ready, man.
I have to call LA and get them a list.
Yeah. So while I'm on the questions of what you like, what you don't, I'm not going to ask you the obvious again of what is your favorite. I mean, I know what your favorite percussion instrument is, but which percussion instrument do you not enjoy playing? Like, you kind of like, oh my gosh, there's this again, or whatever.
I mean, my it's kind of a cop out. I hate whenever I get hand claps as a part to assign.
Okay.
I don't know what my disdain for it is.
There's no logistics. There's no setup issues with that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Every time I've played a piece where hand claps is involved, it's always been trivial and like a throwaway part, like no real reason for it to be there. The only time I've ever been assigned hand claps where it actually mattered was Terrence Blanchard's Champion, where it actually made sense.
Okay.
Yeah, I was very surprised that I actually liked playing hand claps for that.
How about finger snaps? Are you okay with finger snaps?
That I'm fine with.
Okay.
I've
Just don't
always been
clap.
assigned Yeah, I've only had to do that with West Side, and that's fine.
Right, yeah. So looking ahead, where do you see yourself, let's say 10 years from now?
Oh, Prince, hopefully still principal of Grant Park. Hopefully I don't, I mean, it would be cool to have a job that's year round, but I would rather have a job or a second job that I can still do Grant Park, because
Right.
I really, really love doing this job.
Great.
So I would love to see myself as one of the longer standing members.
Right.
10 years at Grant Park. And I don't know. I'm in a position where I'm still auditioning for the like September to June type orchestra. I'm teaching a lot still. I'm doing like tours, doing master classes. I'm gigging around a ton, and I'm playing solos with different places. So
Right.
I'm kind of at a crossroads where I don't know where I'll be, but
Yeah.
I'll be playing music.
There you go.
So I think in a perfect world, I would either have one consistent orchestra gig during the school season, or I would be teaching at the collegiate level while also either gigging around or soloing places. And hopefully by the 10-year mark, I finally release my sixth book, which would be my
All
mallet book, which,
right.
you know, either that or my timpani book. One, it'll be either of the two, won't be both. I'm just gonna have to pick one and just play.
Very good. Yeah. So you mentioned you'll be doing something in music looking ahead. So then I do have to ask, is there a life for you without music?
You know, I think personally, I could enjoy my life doing something as long as there was something creative behind whatever I was doing, I would find happiness. Of course, I do love music, and I hope it'll always be a part of my life. But I mean, I think I found other things. Like I've been getting more into Buddhist meditation,
Hmm.
so that's something where if music was completely gone from my life, I could devote my life to that and feel equally as fulfilled, probably. I don't know, I like teaching, so there will probably be some form of teaching, either meditation or Feldenkrais method, something. I'm sure I would find my niche somewhere. But I, you know, there's nothing like playing stick and shovel. Like, so just if it wasn't music, if I wasn't hitting something, I'd be moving some way.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I think it's in us as, lifetime percussionists. It's just in us. It's a hard thing to separate when you're driving or when you're flying in a plane or whatever. We find, at least I do, find myself just playing on my lap or whatever, or, and
Yeah.
my wife always comments that, oh, there you go. You're at what? It's just in me. I hear rhythm in life. I hear rhythm in just about everything we do, whether it's something in nature, whether it's the other day a bird was making this rhythmic song. It's like, okay,
Yeah.
it's just natural. And I tend to see the notation when I hear things like that. Oh, that's in four, that's in 3/8 or whatever, There's no separating. There's no separating us from that, I don't think. So one
Yeah.
other thing, I'm sure you haven't thought of this because you're on the young side, but when you do decide to end, let's say your career, it's not necessarily a clean break, but how are you going to part with your snare drum, man? I mean, will you just keep that?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I do think I want to give certain, like, a majority of the things I won't use to, you know, future people.
Right.
But things I wouldn't give are definitely my first snare drum.
Yeah.
And like my three snare drums that I got, or that I have, which would be the first one I ever bought, the one I got, custom made by Black Swamp, and then the first drum I got made from Black Swamp. Those three are just never leaving.
Yeah.
My
Yeah.
favorite pair of drumsticks, I think I have it in my will that either they're getting buried with me or they're getting like given to my, you know, partner Sarah, or you know, like
Yeah.
they aren't getting sold at all. Like
Yeah.
those three things are staying with me.
Yeah. Well, quite appropriate. Josh, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And as I mentioned, you are an ABOP founder, so thanks for helping us get started with this. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
That concludes this episode with ABOP founder Josh Jones. A special thank you to our supporters and sponsors for making ABOP's mentorship program happen. Our sponsors include Black Swamp Percussion, Cooperman, Freer Percussion, Innovative Percussion, Majestic, Marimba One, Malatech, Remo, Sabian, Vic Firth, and Zildjian. ABOP is a nonprofit. Your donations are tax deductible. For different ways to contribute, check out our website, www.abop.us. Please follow our podcast. We greatly appreciate your support. We are the Alliance of Black Orchestral Percussionists, ABOP. Thank you for listening.